Well, this week has just flown by, hasn't it? It has for me, and I appreciate you so very much. This has just been a joy for me to get to know you better. I've visited with you a number of times over the years, worshiped with several of you in years gone by, and known you folks a good while. I guess Carol Lyles is the one here I've known the longest. I started to say the oldest, but that shouldn't say that. And I'll tell you what, you know, as you get older and you look back on some precious memories, and I'll never forget, I may tear up. It's just so precious, the time that we had together, even before Danny and Carol married. We'd get together every Sunday night, and we were just kids, and with Jim and Gail Johnson, Danny and Carol, and Julia and I. And we'd study the Bible together. And that was some precious times. But you make a lot of precious memories over the years. And I tell you, we've certainly been blessed. You have been so good to me this week. I appreciate the good food. I appreciate the good conversations that we've had. I appreciate the encouragement that you've given me. You have really encouraged me this week. And I appreciate that so very, very much. Tonight's lesson is a lesson that I think is just a real easy lesson. In fact, if you are middle school age or above, you can teach this lesson to your friends, to those you know. And I'm going to tell you three things you need to remember. We're only going to make three real points tonight in this lesson, three passages that we're going to spend time on. We're going to turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. So if you will, go ahead and turn over to Ecclesiastes chapter 1, and I'll tell you where we're going to go in this book as we travel through it. And what we're going to do is deal with the subject, what is our purpose in life. And while that may be difficult for many people, it should not be too difficult for the child of God. And Solomon, in this book, is trying to figure out what the purpose of life is. So we're going to just boil this down to three different readings from the book of Ecclesiastes. So here it is. You're taking notes. Ecclesiastes chapter 1, verses 1 through 11. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. And Ecclesiastes chapter 12. That's it. That's the lesson. And we just understand those passages, we'll have this lesson down. And I think it'll be a lesson that'll be good for us to look at. The book of Ecclesiastes is a vital piece of the puzzle in the revealed picture that God gives us in His Word. If you ever sat down with a jigsaw puzzle and put it together and ended up with a piece missing, it's frustrating, isn't it? And I'll tell you what, without the book of Ecclesiastes, I think we would be more frustrated when we tried to figure out what our purpose in life is. The sad truth is that many people today are lonely and dejected and happy and filled with sorrow and pain. That's just the way it is. And some simply have no clue as to why we're here on this earth. Let me share this with you, this letter to an advice columnist. It's just kind of a tells us where we are with that. It says, "Dear Alice, I'm desperate, not only for me, but also for most of my fellow human beings. I've forgotten the reason why I'm on this planet. My life seems so senseless, eating, sleeping, going to work, hobbies, of course, while all around me the world is tumbling down. How do I put some meaning in my life?" I'll tell you what, that speaks to a lot of folks today. Because there's a lot of folks today that just don't have a clue what their purpose in life is. And so we want to look at that. We live in a country where 30,000 people commit suicide every year. We live in a world where 1 million people worldwide take their life every year. And I think that's simply a sign to point out that there's a lot of folks that don't have a clue what life is all about, what our purpose in life is all about. And so what we want to do is to look at this struggle that Solomon has. And the Bible tells us he's the wisest man that ever lived and the wisest man that would ever live. And he's got to deal with this purpose in life business. What's it all about? So we start off with Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Let's read verses 1 through 11. Are you with me? "The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes. But the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind also goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full to the place from which the rivers come. There they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be. That which is done is what will be done. And there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. Now let's pick this apart and see what Solomon says. One of the first things he does is he uses three different illustrations to make one point. He illustrates one point three different ways. And the first way he does this is with this concept of sunrise, sunset. We see that in verse 5. He says, the sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rose. We understand that. The sun comes up in the morning, the sun goes down at night. But what happens during that time? Well, we get up in the morning and we get dressed and maybe eat some breakfast and rush off to school or to work. We're gone all day and we come in, we're tired, we rest a little bit, we eat, we watch a little television, we go to bed and get up the next morning and do what? Same thing. You see the cycle? You see the circle? And you do that day in and day out. And days become weeks, and weeks become months, and months become years, and years become decades, and decades become lifetimes. And you look back and say, where did all the time go? I can't believe that my life has gone by so quickly. It reminds me of that song, Sunrise, Sunset, from Fiddler on the Roof, where Tevye says, is this the little girl I carried? Is this the little boy at play? And Golda says, I don't remember growing old. When did they? And Tevye says, when did she get to be a beauty? When did he get to be so tall? And Golda says, wasn't it yesterday when they were small? And the chorus sings, sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset. Swiftly flow the days. Seedlings turn overnight to sunflowers, blossoming even as we gaze. Sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset. Swiftly fly the years, one season following another, laden with happiness and tears. I'll tell you what, when you're young, time seems to go by awful slow. It seems to take forever for Christmas to roll around. Do you remember being young and wanting school to be out so you could have those Christmas holidays? It seemed like it would never come. You get older and you know what? It seems like Christmas comes about every 3 weeks. The life that we're experiencing is just going by so fast. And so he sees this. And it frustrates him as he's trying to figure out the purpose of life. He says, we're just going around in circles. But look at the second illustration in verse 6. He talks about the circular courses of the wind. He says the wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. What did he say? Same thing. We're just going around in circles. And this has been proven out scientifically that there are circular courses of the wind. I downloaded this off the computer and it said circular courses of the wind. That's what he's talking about right here. It's like the wind going around in circles. That's what we do. And we don't seem to be getting anywhere. And as he's trying to figure out his purpose in life, he says, well, that doesn't make sense. And then, in verse 7, he talks about the evaporation cycle. He says, all the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full to the place from which the rivers come. There they return again. Now, you learn this in about the fourth grade. You learn how the rain comes down from heaven. It comes down from the skies out of the clouds and it lands on the fields and it gathers in the low places and it drains off into the little branches and the streams and the creeks and the rivers and finally it flows into the sea. And the sun causes it to evaporate and it goes back up in the clouds and what happens? It comes down at the end. So he says we're going around in circles. Three different ways he illustrates the fact that in life we seem to be going around in circles. We're not getting anywhere. So what's the purpose in life? Life's like a merry-go-round. It goes round and around. But the big difference between life and a merry-go-round is that oftentimes life is not merry as it goes around. Would you agree with that? You know, when I was young, back in the 60s, we had some musical groups that had strange names like Beatles and Birds and things like that. And there was a group called the Byrds, B-Y-R-D-S, and they had a song called Turn, Turn, Turn. And it came from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And what they did is simply read from Ecclesiastes, or sing from Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And every time they sing a part of it, they say, turn, turn, turn. To everything there's a season. Turn, turn, turn. And a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to pluck up that which is planted. Turn, turn, turn. And what they were saying was, it's just going around in circles. And they sold a million, or several million of those records of that. And for you young people, if you don't know what a record is, that's a vinyl disc with grooves on it that's played on a machine called a phonograph. And someday you might go to a museum and get to see one. But that's what we used way back in antiquity there when we had music back in the 60s. But the illustration is that you're just going around in life. You're spinning your wheels is an expression that we use. We don't seem to be getting anywhere. And then to add insult to that, he says in verse 11, notice there's no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of those things that are to come. Wait a minute. I'm just going around in circles, and when I die, nobody's going to remember me? That's right. Yeah. John Beckman and I were talking the other night about these cemeteries and how there's some great danger to cemeteries. Trees are the greatest dangers to cemeteries. And I've seen so many of those stones that are just cracked all to pieces and falling to pieces. They don't last. And people don't remember. We put up those monuments to try to remember, but you know they fade away too. We forget the lessons of the past and we don't remember our past. And let me prove it to you. Can you name your great-grandparents? Now, if I were to ask that question, I doubt there's anybody in here can name your eight. Somebody said, I can name all four of mine. No, there's eight of them. There's eight great-grandparents. Can you name them? Chances are you can't. In fact, if you can name more than one or two, you're probably ahead of the curve. So you know what that means for you? Your great-grandchildren are not going to remember you. You mean we're going around in circles, and then when I die, nobody's going to remember? That's right. That's what he says here. He's figured that much out, but he doesn't like what he's figured out. So he goes to chapter 2. If we're going around in circles, let's find happiness in life some other way. Let's read chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see all that was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their life. And I made my works great. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind, and there was no profit under the sun. Well, the first thing he realizes there in chapter 1, we're going around in circles, and when we die, nobody's going to remember us. He doesn't like that. So he says, you know, I think I'm going to figure out how to find a purpose in life. And the purpose of life is to come on, baby, let the good times roll, party hardy, for tomorrow you may die. Acquire all you can get all you can, have it all, have wine, women, song, everything that the heart can desire, that's where happiness is. I remember at school one day I saw a kid wearing a t-shirt coming toward me. And on the front of the t-shirt, it said, "The one who dies with the most toys wins." And as the kid walked on past me, I looked at the back of the shirt, and the back of the shirt said, "But you're still dead." Think about that. You can't take it with you. You're still dead. And so he's talking about, well, I'm going to find happiness in the things that I can produce or make or build or have. I'm just amazed sometimes at what kids can come up with, and I don't know where they get the money to do these things. But I remember one time at school, there was this kid had one of these sound systems in his car, and you could hear him coming three blocks away. You hear that bass, you know? And I asked him one day, I said, "What did that sound system cost in that car?" He said, $12,000. "Well, a car wasn't worth $1,000, I'm sure. I don't know where he came up with $12,000. And I thought, wow, that's amazing that you can put that kind of money. But you know what? Solomon didn't even have a sound system. He just called in the artist and had them to sing for him when he wanted to hear them. You see, he acquired male and female singers. He had the best in the country just right there. All he had to do is snap his finger, they'd start singing. He had it all. And you know, when he got through with all of that, he looks back on it and he says, it's like trying to hold a wind in your hand. You can't do it. Vanity. Vanity is all it is. Solomon had it all. I'm telling you, this man, he just had everything. He had money, power, wealth, women, you name it. He had it. And let me just mention this. If you want to put your marker there and turn over to 1 Kings chapter 4, I'll just share a few things that he had. 1 Kings chapter 4 at verse 26 says Solomon had 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariots. 40,000 stalls of horses for his chariot. 12,000 horsemen. And these governors, each man in this month, provided food for the king, Solomon, and for all who came to the king's table. There was no lack in their supply, and they brought barley and straw to the proper place for the horses and steeds, each man according to his charge. Verse 29 says, Solomon had wisdom and exceeding great understanding. He still had this tremendous ability. Chapter 10, verse 1 tells us that the queen of Sheba had heard about Solomon. And she thought, this can't be true. I'm going to go check it out for myself. And so she goes to see Solomon. She spends time with him. And she comes to the conclusion in verse 7. However, I did not believe the words till I came and saw with my own eyes. And indeed the half has not been told. Your wisdom and prosperity exceed the fame of which I've heard. Oh, he had it all. 1 Kings 11:3 says he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. The wisest man on the earth evidently lost his soul by turning to the religions of these ungodly women. Well, he had it all, but was he happy? You know, I think sometimes we get in that mode, boy, if I could win the reader's sweepstake, whatever it is, if I just had all that money, I'd be the happiest person ever. Have you ever read any of those stories about those folks that won some of those things and how miserable their lives became? Oh, it's awful. You fill in the blank for me. I want to know what it is that makes you happy. If I only had blank, I would be happy. Now, you think about that for just a minute. What is it going to take to make you happy? If you had one wish and it would come true, what would go in the blank? Somebody says, if I had $1 million, I'd be happy. You think so? Somebody said, well, if I had a new car, a new truck, I'd be happy. That's all it'd take to make me happy. Somebody says, if I had a new home, I'd be happy. And somebody else says, well, you know, if I just had my home paid for, I would be happy. Somebody says, if I had a better paying job, I'd be happy. Do you notice that happiness in this statement is always in the future? Do you see that? It's always out front of you. If I only had my kids grown, I'd be happy. Don't you ever say that. If I only had my health, I'd be happy. And I'll tell you what. If you've ever lost your health, that might be where you want to go as far as filling in the blank. And I never will forget that when we went to River Bend 8 years ago, Sister Pauline Lee was a member there, and Sister Pauline Lee had one leg. Just a few years before that, Sister Lee and Brother Lee were out working on their farm. They had a 500-acre farm right there by River Bend, and they were grinding up corn in a corn grinding machine. And she would never wear pants without wearing her dress over them. And she got her dress caught in that machine, and it pulled her into it, and it chewed her leg off, and almost got the other one. And she lived through that. I don't know how she lived through it, but she did. But how many times I heard Sister Pauline Lee say, if I only had my leg, I'd be happy. Oh, friends, we have so many blessings. It seems like we're always looking for something else. If I only had blank, I would be happy. What's it going to take? Jay Gould, an American millionaire, on his deathbed said, I suppose I'm the most miserable man on earth. Money's not going to make you happy. And I think this statement by Margaret Runbeck may be one of the best. Happiness is not a station you arrive at, but a manner of traveling. I think most of us in our minds think one of these days I'm going to arrive at Happiness, Alabama, and everything's just going to be wonderful. We're not ever going to get there. If you don't enjoy the travel, you won't enjoy life. Did you know that? Happiness is in the travel, not in the destination. And Abraham Lincoln is quoted as saying, most folks are about as happy as they make up their minds to be. So how happy are you? Are you happy? I hope you are. I hope you are. Well, that brings us to our last point. We got there quickly, didn't we? Let's just turn over there to Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and see what the Bible has to say. As he goes through all of this trying to figure out where happiness is, first of all, he decides we're going around in circles, we're not getting anywhere, and when we die, nobody's going to remember us. And then he says happiness must be in wine, women, and song, partying, having a good time. And then he says that's like trying to hold the wind in your hand. And then we come to chapter 12. And notice what he says. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth before the difficult days come. And the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. Young people, please pay attention to what he just said. Did you hear what he said? Remember your Creator in the days of your youth before the difficult days come. They will come. And I've said this before. I remember being 35 years old and making the statement that no, I had never had anyone in my family or close to me to die. Anyone in my family to die. And within a year, I lost 3 or 4 family members. And shortly after that, I lost my mother. And Julia lost her father and her brother-in-law. And then my brother, my mother, just on and on and on. And it's going to come. Young people, if you haven't experienced it, it's going to come. I want you to back up with me. If you're at Ecclesiastes chapter 12, back up just a couple of verses. And let me share these with you also. Look at verse 9 there in chapter 11. Do you see it? He says, rejoice, O young man, in your youth. And let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of your eyes. But know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Do you see that? Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are a vanity. You know what he just said? He said, young folks, enjoy life. Young folks, have a good time. Young folks, get out there and just enjoy life to the fullest. But you keep this in mind that you're going to stand before God in the day of judgment as you're doing that. Don't forget it. Because judgment changes everything. When you start trying to figure out the purpose of life, there is no purpose in life if there is no judgment. And you might as well go out and party hard and have a good time. But I'll tell you, there is a God, there is a judgment. And we'll stand before God in judgment. And that's what changes everything. And so he talks about the brevity of life as we look at this passage here in Ecclesiastes chapter 12. And I want you to notice some of the things that are said here. And I have interspersed the scripture with commentary. It's in the blue there, as you can read through there and see it. We'll just make a few comments about it. He says, in the day when the keepers of the house tremble, he's probably referencing the arms and the hands growing weak, and the strong men bow down, their legs grow bent and feeble. When the grinders cease because they're few, the teeth become fewer. There's all kinds of problems with the teeth as you get older. And those that look through the windows grow dim, eyesight begins to fail. I'm sure Brother Mel could tell us about many, many older folks that he's had to see as an eye doctor to take care of their eyes and Just in the past 3 years, I've had cataract surgery on both of mine. It's nice to be able to see, but your eyesight begins to fail. When the doors of the are shut to the streets, possibly a picture of the lips sinking in due to a loss of teeth, and the sound of grinding is low, there's a loss of hearing. I tell you what, don't ever laugh at folks that can't hear, okay? I remember those old people, you know, they say, what are you saying? And my wife and I do that so much now, and it's really sad. It's funny, but it's sad. About 3 or 4 years ago, it got so bad, I went to the ear doctor, and he said, you've lost some of your hearing. He said, most people lose hearing as they get older. He said, you hadn't lost enough that you need hearing aids. And I said, well, my wife says I don't ever listen to her. He said, well, that's a common complaint. And he says, let me tell you why they say that. That's because the pitch of a woman's voice is difficult for a man to hear when he starts to lose his hearing. So men, you just be sure you tell your wife that. The doctor said, it's not that you're not listening. It's not that you don't want to listen. It's just that's the way it is, okay? One lady told me, I preached this one time, she said, my husband elbowed me good on that. When one rises up at the sound of the bird, a bird, inability to sleep. Young people, you don't know this. Young people, you are amazing creatures. You can go to bed on Friday night at 10 o'clock and wake up at 12 o'clock on Saturday. That is amazing. You get old, you'll go to bed at 10 o'clock on Friday night and you'll be up by 1 going to the bathroom. You can't handle it. It happens when you get old. There's all kind of problems. And then you can't sleep. And I've looked around tried to find these sleep aids and so forth to help me go to sleep. It's tough getting old. And the daughters of music are brought low. Again, it's hard to hear sounds. They also are afraid of height and of terrors in the way. These figures suggest a fear of venturing out. When the almond tree blossoms, the hair starts turning gray. The grasshopper's a burden, the picture of an old or injured grasshopper dragging itself about. Yet at one time the grasshopper was able to fly and jump about, a picture of youth. I can remember my father. My father was a little fellow. He was a very small man, and he was very agile. And I remember he could stand in the front yard and take 4 or 5 steps and run in and jump up in the air and turn a flip and keep running. That just always amazed me. And the last image I have of my father is of an old man leaning on a cane and having a difficult time moving about. And desire fails, diminished appetite, sexual and otherwise. For man goes to his eternal home. It culminates in death. We all go to the grave, and the mourners go about the streets. Remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed or the golden bowl is broken. A silver cord holding a golden bowl in which a light burns, snaps, and the bowl is shattered. Or broken. Or the pitcher shattered at the fountain. The death pitcher which holds the water shattered again. It's a figure of death. Or the wheel broken at the well. The wheel used to raise the water from the well is broken. Also symbolic of death. We're all going to die. We're going to get old and die. Well, you've really left us here with a problem, Solomon. First of all, we go around and around in life, don't get anywhere, and nobody remembers us. Secondly, we try to find the purpose of life in all kinds of things that we can possess and gather, and that doesn't work, and then we get old and die. So where's the hope in all of that? Well, it's in verses 13 and 14. Let's look at it together. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. The conclusion is that life is a preparatory period for judgment. The compelling conclusion is that this life is a probationary period for a day of reckoning beyond which we will be rewarded or punished. And with that in mind, our lives can have purpose and meaning. The question, can our lives have purpose and meaning in the absence of accountability before God? If there is no God, and I don't have to stand before God, how can there be any accountability in life? There is none. There is none. But there is a God. And there is judgment. And there is accountability. If you take Judgment Day out of the picture, then we are nothing but specks of dust on a revolving ball in a solar system in a much bigger galaxy in a universe so gigantic that it staggers the imagination. In other words, we're just not worth very much. I'm amazed at some of these shots that you see from outer space looking back toward the Earth. The Earth looks so big and beautiful, but you know, the further away you get, the smaller it gets. And you are just a speck on this planet. Again, we're not worth much except for the fact that there is a God who made us worth something, who sent His Son to that earth to die for mankind. And someday man will stand before God in the day of judgment, with an ultimate day in the court of the Almighty awaiting us, with eternity hanging in the balances. Then every word that we say, every deed that we do, every thought that we have are suddenly invested with eternal importance and purpose. Now we can find our purpose in life, because there is a God and there is a judgment. The point is that our worth and value are tied to the judgment. There's no getting around it. And we're not worth anything if there's not a judgment. What's our purpose in life? Oh, there's so many people today that just don't have a clue. And they don't have a clue because they don't know about God. They don't know about the judgment. They don't know that they need to believe in Jesus Christ as the Son of God and repent of their sins and confess Christ and be buried with their Lord in baptism so that they might rise to walk in newness of life. And the Lord says, if you'll do that and be faithful unto death, I'll give you a crown of life. That's what it's all about. I hope that's what's important to you. Thank you so much for your kind attention. And if you're subject to the invitation in any way, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.
While the light from the throne shines for you and me, let us lift to the call of love. Zion's call is ringing, coming from the throne above. We have help from right.